From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. After a 2022 expose about disturbing conduct in front of and behind the cameras on some of Nickelodeon's biggest hits, filmmakers Emma Schwartz and Mary Robertson decided to explore the facts in a documentary series.
We thought that these were really meaningful questions because the content that was created on these sets was then distributed to children all around the world, and children are impressionable. You know, what they absorb shapes their sense of normality and their cultural standards and mores generally.
Robertson and Schwartz talk about working with Kate Taylor, author of a Business Insider expose, to uncover what happened at Nickelodeon on star producer Dan Schneider's watch. They ended up with a five-part series, Quiet on the Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. The directors explore allegations of Schneider's abusive and creepy conduct, as well as their approach to former child star Drake Bell, who revealed that at the age of 15, he was a victim of former Nickelodeon dialogue coach and child predator Brian Peck. But first we banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague at Banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So a lot of people have gotten some bad news, some people who worked at the company and are losing their jobs, but I think everyone in Hollywood probably is sad to see the end of Participant, which was a company run by a very wealthy Jeff Skoll, who was progressive, wanted the product to be progressive, became, I think, the first big thing they really did was An Inconvenient Truth, which was a very prescient and urgent documentary from former Vice President Al Gore. But they went on to make a lot of documentaries and scripted films. They did Green Book, which won an Oscar, but a lot of other stuff that people would be familiar with. And at a time when Hollywood is feeling very, very anxious about where things are going, Jeff Skoll saying, I'm not doing this anymore. Anything in development is going to be dropped, and we're basically shuttering this place except for a skeleton staff to manage our library. That's not the news people want to hear.
No, and in many ways, Participant was the ideal company for creative talent because it had this dual mandate. They were saying explicitly, yes, we would like to make money on our projects and be a going concern. And they had a CEO in David Lindy, who was a real studio executive and knew what he was doing. But they also had this other mandate of social change and good and influencing the culture. And a project that they backed could be successful by doing either. You know, ideally, it would be both, something like Green Book, which was successful and also had a message. But it could be considered successful internally if it had the right message that they wanted, even if it wasn't successful. And to Hollywood creatives, that's the golden ticket.
Yeah, that's the dream. And I spoke to someone who does a lot of stuff in the independent world where this is really hitting. And he said that this ambition of doing good and doing well is a very difficult thing to achieve. And I think maybe Jeff Skoll has changed. Maybe he's feeling his years are not in perfect health. There's lots of rumors about this and that. But bottom line is, it's a loss at a time when people really want and need places to pick up and make movies. It's just become very difficult now, as we have often talked about. Let me pivot to the so-called Spulu. This is the joint venture of ESPN, Fox, and the Warner Brothers Discovery Networks, TBS and TNT. It turns out, possibly not very surprisingly, that a couple of congressmen, namely Gerald Nadler of New York and Joaquin Castro of Texas, have sent off a letter to Bob Iger saying, so what are you doing?
Yeah, it's not just Iger, it's Lachlan Murdoch, it's David Zaslav at Warner Discovery, and they're essentially saying they want more information about this joint venture because they fear it could be bad for competition, it could be a mechanism to raise prices, although this is kind of bizarre because the whole point of this is to offer a sports-centric skinny bundle of channels that would allow people to pay less for a package if all they do is watch sports. But they're trying, at least making noise about potentially raising antitrust issues. And that's interesting because, as we know, this has been controversial in the cable world. Fubo TV, which is a competitor in the distribution of channels business, they have actually sued to block the joint venture. And I wouldn't be surprised if, as this goes along and more is revealed about the pricing and the launch date, that we hear more from representatives like this.
Yeah, I mean, these congressmen are asking questions like, will the joint venture partners continue to bid competitively against one another for sports rights as they become available? Because in this case, what they're looking for is signs of collusion, which definitely opens the door to antitrust problems.
Yeah, and the run-up in sports rights prices over the past decade or two has been because there are all of these different companies that are so dependent on the audiences that sports bring. So if Warner Discovery and Disney and Fox are going to potentially join together to bid on something, that's kind of necessarily going to bring down the price because they're not going to be bidding against each other.
Well, it goes without saying, sports are live event. They're the final things in the world that you have to sit there at a certain time if you don't want to be, you know, reading something that you don't want to read on your phone about a game that you care about. So the value of sports has just skyrocketed in this on-demand era.
Yeah, the funny thing is, though, is that people in the TV business have kind of called this a nothing burger. I mean, even Lachlan Murdoch has said on an earnings call that he sees the potential audience for this as being about 5 million subscribers over like 5 years. So it's not like this is going to reinvent the cable bundle. They just see it as an alternative and as something that could get a few sports fans to be interested in. So I don't know that this is necessarily going to be the big, bad joint venture, anti-competitive market changer that these government representatives think it might be.
I will just say that I would like Lachlan Murdoch hooked up to a lie detector test when he says that. I can't imagine they want to go to that trouble for that few subscribers, but I can understand why he might say that. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, founding partner of Puck News. In 2022, Business Insider reporter Kate Taylor published an exposé detailing years of inappropriate behavior on the sets of Nickelodeon's big hitmaker, writer-producer Dan Schneider. Former actors and crew members began to speak out about bullying, verbal abuse, and general creepiness on Schneider's shows in the early 2000s, including Drake and Josh, Zoe 101, and iCarly. In the wake of that expose, documentary filmmakers Mary Robertson and Emma Schwartz partnered with Taylor to create a docuseries about Schneider's rise and fall at the cable channel. Quiet on the Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV also uncovers shocking revelations of sexual abuse that former child star Drake Bell suffered at the hands of Nickelodeon dialogue coach Brian Peck when Bell was 15 years old. Previously, Bell had been an unnamed accuser when Peck was charged with his crimes, leading to a 16-month prison sentence. Bell describes how, when he appeared in court for the trial, he was shocked to see fellow Nickelodeon stars coming forward in support of Peck.
There were definitely some recognizable faces on that side of the room. And my side was me, my mom, and my brother. Brian had been convicted, but getting all of this support from a lot of people in the industry, and yeah, I was pretty shocked.
Back in 2017, when the Harvey Weinstein exposés were finally published, we at The Hollywood Reporter got deluged with tips, and we could barely keep up. We had so many, and some of them we actually reported out and were stories, but we had got so many tips about Dan Schneider and Nickelodeon that we went at it as best we could. My colleague at the time, Scott Johnson, and I made dozens and dozens of calls, and we just got absolutely nowhere. Nobody even mentioned the bullying, much less, you know, the sort of double entendre stuff that was happening with these shows. And then all credit to Kate Taylor at Business Insider. She did manage to get there in 2022. But I wonder, having done this series, can you understand why nothing happened in 2017 with those dozens of calls? And then I'm giving her credit for being a great reporter, but we also tried and we had absolutely no willingness. And is there any speculation why that was then? And then now it's more ripe to come out?
Wow, that's a fascinating question. I think that timing is so consequential in these types of endeavors. And I think Jeanette McCurdy's memoir helped create momentum around this story, in a sense, to survivors that, you know, their experiences had perhaps been echoed by others, and that their experiences, if shared, might be met with positivity and generosity, you know, and I think that the passage of time and distance generally fosters a sense of safety amongst those survivors who have a story to share. And we give huge credit to Kate Taylor, who really took, you know, the questions that were swirling around Dan Schneider seriously and advanced the reporting in a meaningful way. And then I want to give credit to my directing partner, Emma, who, after partnering with Kate, really expanded that source list and was able to convert a lot of the anonymous sources into sources who were willing to talk on camera.
Also, I think part of what was happening in 2017 with the Me Too movement is with like a Harvey Weinstein, you have multiple women making these like incredibly devastating allegations and of what happened and other examples where it's sexual assault and rape. And what was happening on Quiet on Set under Dan's shows was devastating to many people involved. But, you know, a lot of what we look at in the documentary is, you know, how these shows are put together, what's happening behind the scenes. There's sexual harassment allegations that come from a number of the female writers. There's bullying. There's a lot of that. But it's not exactly the same as the kinds of allegations you had against Harvey Weinstein. And where we saw the child predators on sets, they were other people in this environment. And I think the nature and the contours of the story were slightly different. And I think for some people, even with some people who didn't want to talk, they said, well, I didn't see something criminal. So there's bad stuff, but it's not that bad stuff, right? And so I think there were different layers to the story that made it in some ways harder to tell.
Yeah, I mean, we actually did go out to Jeanette McCurdy. And at the time, she gave us these very kind of mysterious elliptical answers, you know, and when you don't want to lean on somebody who's suffered abuse, so you don't want to push too hard. But they were just incredibly ambiguous answers. And then she told it all in the book, but I guess she didn't want to come on camera, I assume, because she wasn't in the series.
We approached Jeanette McCurdy as well, and she declined to participate in our program. We cover part of her story in the project. She's so essential to the telling of any story about this era at Nickelodeon.
Was the inspiration for this the Kate Taylor article in Business Insider?
Emma and I, along with some of our brilliant colleagues at Maxim Productions, had noticed videos online. These videos featured clips that were recorded on sets that Dan Schneider presided over. And in these clips, you see young teens appearing in these scenes that are arguably sexual in nature. There's one of Ariana Grande leaning off the side of a bed, pouring water on her face, and another of Ariana Grande squeezing a potato in a manner that's arguably evocative of pornography. Another of Jamie Lynn Spears receiving this squirt of a viscous liquid on her face in a manner that I would say is, again, arguably evocative of pornography. And there were many online who were watching these videos as adults, realizing that they had grown up perhaps consuming some of this content and wondered if there was other sexual, arguably sexual content that they had consumed as children without knowing, because these, if you could call them jokes, had gone over their head. And folks online were wondering if this arguably sexual content featuring young teens had been made, which adult said yes, which adult said no. And if this type of content had been produced, what might it suggest about what else was happening behind the scenes that ranges from inappropriate to illegal? And we thought that these were really meaningful questions because they pertain to working conditions for children, and really meaningful questions because the content that was created on these sets was then distributed to children all around the world. And children are impressionable. You know, what they absorb shapes their sense of normality and their cultural standards and mores generally. So we were looking and thinking about these questions. And then Kate Taylor published her article in Business Insider, which really advanced the reporting beyond what anyone had done previously on the subject matter. And we partnered with Business Insider. And then our team at Maxine dug in, and Emma led the team of investigative journalists that began outreach to sources and work to expand that list of sources so that you have the over a dozen sources on camera that you see in Quiet on Set.
So in persuading people to go on camera, I mean, having done a number of Me Too type of stories, getting anybody on the record is very difficult, but sitting in front of a camera is probably that much more. Although these people were used to being on camera in many cases. So how did you figure out who was approaching whom? And was there long persuasion or any instantaneous yeses?
I'm not sure there was any instantaneous yeses, but I mean, that is completely understandable. You know, going on camera is always difficult, and especially so when you're talking about sensitive and traumatic experiences. Everyone's experience is sort of different, but, you know, in general, when I would reach out to people, you start with a conversation, you listen to where they are, what they have to share, and what their concerns are about sharing that story. And we often don't talk about whether or not they're ready to go on camera in that first conversation, but you keep that conversation going and, you know, people come to a decision at the place that that, you know, works for them. And I think one thing that was really wonderful about this experience is we had so much support from the network, from everybody, to sort of take that time and build those relationships and give people the space they needed to decide if they were ready.
Yes, it's a sensitive thing. Clearly, Nickelodeon sort of saw this coming because back in 2018, they did an investigation and they said they found no sexual misconduct from Schneider, which hasn't been alleged, but that employees expressed that he was controlling and verbally abusive toward them, and then they dissolved the partnership that year. How do you interpret that? I mean, do you feel like they kind of had an inkling all along, but didn't? I mean, because that language is, you know, we take this seriously. I've heard it a dozen times, but they didn't seem to take it seriously for a long time. Did you have any sense of who knew what and when?
I think, you know, what you hear from a number of the participants of the documentary was a sense that, you know, they felt that they had experienced problems or challenges on set, but didn't feel like they had a place to go to. That's, you know, exactly, I think, one of the lines that the costumers say. New stuff was going on, but who were you going to speak with? And that was one of the concerns that many people had for many years.
In terms of the legal stuff, how difficult was it? Or maybe it wasn't difficult.
We work with a wonderful First Amendment attorney who deserves to be identified, Cam Stracker, who's a key part of our team. You know, I mean, listen, we went through extensive legal review. We stand behind everything that we've put in the film. Our lawyer is an integral part of our team and worked with us at one moment to petition the court to unseal the letters of support.
For Brian Peck, the predator on set. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it was Emma had identified that these letters exist, and Emma had worked previously as a court reporter, knew they were meant to be public. And we engaged our attorney, Cam Stracker, and asked what we could do about it. And he said that we could petition the court to unseal them. So we did. Cam and his colleagues argued before the judge, and ultimately the judge did agree to unseal these letters of support. And they're a really, you know, critical part of the final film.
Coming up after the break, Mary Robertson and Emma Schwartz talk about building trust with Drake Bell as he agreed to talk publicly about his sexual abuse at the hands of a Nickelodeon employee. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Mary Roberts and Emma Schwartz, who executive produced and directed the documentary series Quiet on the Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. Their expose explores years of behind-the-scenes conduct on Nickelodeon hit shows such as All That, Drake and Josh, and iCarly. The man at the center of this profitable universe was the very powerful writer-director Dan Schneider, who stands accused of abusive and inappropriate behavior. I wonder whether certain people were immune from the behavior. I think there's at least one person who says, I didn't see anything wrong. Well, actually, I'm referring to Drake Bell. I believe he says he didn't see that kind of conduct coming from Dan. Am I right about that?
Well, I think what he talks about is that Dan was someone who was supportive of him during the time that he was, you know, going through the case. And I think, you know, keep in mind, people are layered. People who were on the cast may have had different experiences than people who were in the crew. And two things can be true at the same time.
Yes, that's true. Sometimes when reporting these stories, the word goes out that you're reporting a story and people get in touch with you. Did that happen for you guys?
That is still happening. And we're, you know, we're grateful for anyone who is desirous to share their story with us. It takes a lot to come forward. I think it takes a lot to come forward and speak with a journalist or a filmmaker off the record. It takes a lot of bravery to come forward and, you know, offer your account on camera. This project exists entirely because of the bravery of the contributors who decided to sit down and open up.
Well, yes. I think the most shocking thing is the Drake Bell experience, that not only was there a predator on set who he is now publicly accused, but this guy went to prison and then was hired at the Disney Channel. I can't recall right now whether you got something back from Disney, but the fact that that could happen and that there's nothing to prevent a convicted predator to be on set with children, that is obviously one of the mind-blowing things in your series.
Yeah, it's definitely it was a striking fact to see that that happened. And in fact, some of the motivation for some of the contributors was knowing that there's not a law that bars registered sexual offenders from being on sets. It's up to the studio or the network to do background checks themselves. And, you know, many feel that that is something unacceptable.
Part of what we're hearing right now in response to the film is a call for federal legislation that would protect children working on sets and in the entertainment industry. There's a shocking lack of federal legislation. Children working in entertainment in many ways have less protections than children who are working in other sectors. There's a patchwork of state laws. So certainly there are laws in California and New York that offer some protections, but no federal law. And as Emma mentioned, there's a sort of shocking lack of requirement around background checks specifically.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. Can you talk to me about approaching Drake? I mean, were you aware that he was the child through the grapevine? And how did you go about addressing it with him? So obviously, a maximum sensitivity.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the course of talking to people, we came to quickly understand that in a very short period in 2003, two men had been arrested and convicted on charges of child sex abuse, Jason Handy and Brian Peck. And, you know, to me, this is incredibly striking because it's not like there was news coverage about that at the time, that it was two people on the same set. And it raised so many questions about how did this happen? Who knew and who was hurt? And, you know, in talking with people, you know, Hollywood is a small place. There were people who thought it was Drake, and it came to a point where I felt pretty confident that he was the victim, but you never kind of know where somebody is in dealing with their trauma. He'd never spoken publicly about it. So I wrote a letter and he responded and we began a back and forth. And, you know, he was very reluctant and uncertain, but you could tell that he was very much processing that trauma. He was at a place in his life, I think, where it was very raw and something that he was trying to sort of start to face head on. And, you know, over time we met and, you know, built a level of trust and, you know, he agreed to sit down for an interview. But, you know, I think it's not sort of a linear path, right? You know, I don't think he walked out of the interview and said, this was like the best decision, everything's good. It was up and down and up and down. Was this the right decision? How are people going to receive me? And it's a journey that continues to today.
When you decided to do this series, was Maxine the company set up with Discovery?
I founded Maxine 2 years ago. We're part of Sony Pictures Television Nonfiction. We're committed to creating work that's powered by incredible journalists, incredible journalism, but work that is captivating, compelling, enthralling narrative and reaches the widest possible audience. This project, Quiet On Set, is a perfect example of what we hope to make and to commit ourselves to producing. It was one of the first projects that we pitched and developed. It was, I believe, our first official commission. We now have multiple projects in production and that have been announced, but it is insanely, wildly special on so many different levels. And our partnership with Investigation Discovery is one of the aspects of this that has been so meaningful and purposeful. And it really feels as though they're the perfect partners for this endeavor. At the very onset, Jason Sarlanis, the president of Investigation Discovery, I believe knew how powerful this could be, just absolutely knew from the onset, supported us holistically, gave us the time and the space that we need to get it right, and continues to support us to this day.
Did the financing change as the project went forward? And in other words, you know, did you get a bigger budget as you started to get people on camera?
I love your inside industry questions. They're great.
Well, this show is called The Business, so that's what we're talking
about. Yeah, totally. We initially began with a 3-episode order, and then we realized that this was bigger than 3 episodes. And of course, now this is 5 episodes.
Yeah, it's not even done.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether I assume that you're still going. You did the extra episode, but I have this feeling that that's not where it ends.
We're committed to continuing this work. And, you know, clearly there's a real, I think, hunger for more. And there's an overwhelming sense that perhaps what we've shared is the tip of the iceberg. I don't know that to be the case, but we do hear that a lot from those who have watched the film. There's curiosity and hunger and a desire to continue to grapple with these issues and to learn as much as we possibly can.
Yes, and I saw that you were looking at going into social media, which is a very different kind of thing. But can you talk a little bit about how that would work? The impact of social media on kids, that is.
I think I saw a headline that was a little bit confusing. I think where that was coming from is that, you know, we were asked a little bit about sort of where there could be changes, where people are looking for changes across the industry. And I think that one of the areas in which you see a lot of sort of children's involvement in, you know, content creation or entertainment now that was different than, you know, 15, 20 years ago is in the realm of social media. And that is another area that is in fact much less regulated than even on sets. And so, you know, is there a way for that universe to learn from some of the lessons that are coming out of Quiet on Set?
Did you get threatened at all by Nickelodeon? I'm not talking about like a car driving you off the road. I mean, letters.
We offered Nickelodeon the chance to participate in the project. We sent them a list of questions and we've included their response in the project.
So I'm going to read the between the lines. I mean, I could paper my walls with threat letters I've gotten, and they're always full of very strong language. But so far, knock wood, no lawsuits. So let me ask also about Drake. You know, Drake did get into trouble with the law. He had DUI. He was in a serious accident. And he did plead guilty. Drake had sent this minor inappropriate social media messages. He was 31, this child who I think was about 15, and he took this plea. And he said, I did it because, you know, to put it behind me. It's not something you'd explored much. I don't know if he made that a condition or if you just felt like it's not that. I just have to ask you what your attitude was to that piece of information.
There was nothing that was off limits in that way. It was more that our story was focused so much on the experiences of child actors on sets, right? At this period of time and what had happened over the course of these many years. You know, as you see sort of at the very end of the documentary, we come back to the former child actors and address some of the long shadows. But it is a sort of a small sort of closing part of the project and wasn't ultimately the focus of the story that we set out to tell.
Right. So what is next for you guys?
We are continuing this line of reporting. We're committed to pursuing more in the same vein and, you know, ready and interested to hear related accounts when folks are ready to share them. We have a number of exciting projects in the works at Maxine. Many of them are investigative in nature. Many of them are what you might sort of broadly characterize as pop culture investigations. Haven't been announced just yet, so can't share too much about it. But we're empowered and uplifted by the response to this project. And, you know, the very short of it is that we would love to create more of the same, you know, more of the same work that takes a rigorous journalistic practice and applies it to questions that emerge from pop culture, you know, more work that aims to sort of unearth revelations and is bolstered by, you know, robust reporting and robust sourcing.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to see what you come up with next. You certainly know what you're doing. Mary Robertson and Emma Schwartz, executive produced and directed Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. The docuseries is streaming now on Max. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Kim.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from Phil Richards, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW shows on kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.